You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up Here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of the big show. Glad you're here. Jamie is out this week doing business for the company on the East Coast because she's an executive here at the company. She wears many hats, so she has been pulled out there to do some business. But have no fear. Daybreak is here every morning. 855-75-CIVIC is how you get a hold of us. And if you call in, be nice to Parker, because to get to me, you got to get through him. So be very nice. All right. It is the top of the hour. That means it's time for some you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
All right, we started talking about this on the show within a show. Real quickly, two passengers have tested positive for hantavirus as a third one shows symptoms after the cruise ship has been evacuated. A French woman and two Americans tested positive or showed symptoms of hantavirus this morning as nations around the world scrambled to repatriate passengers from a cruise ship hit by an outbreak and quarantine or isolate them. One of the 17 American passengers evacuated from the ship and flown to Nebraska also tested positive for the hantavirus, but is not showing any symptoms. Another had mild symptoms, U.S. health officials said late yesterday. Now, the flight landed in the early hours today and stopped near buses and police vehicles there in Nebraska. The Americans were first taken to the University of Nebraska Medical Center, which has a federally funded quarantine facility to assess whether they have been in close contact with any symptomatic people and their risk levels for spreading the virus. Now, before you start to panic, I'm looking at you, Parker. WHO director of the World Health Organization, which, you know, we're not really part of anymore, but we can still get reports from the World Health Organization. The director has stressed that the general public should not be worried about the outbreak. This is not another COVID, he said, and the risk to the public is low, so they shouldn't be scared and they shouldn't panic. So just keep an eye on things, because quite frankly, and I'm not hoping for this at all. But if, God forbid, something were to start spreading, I do not trust our administration to handle it well, based on past experience and based on yesterday when the president said, we have it well under control. I think we have it under control. Okay, this is, you know. But right now, again, we're not trying to spread panic or hysteria. Nothing to worry about yet. Just know that it's there. Know that they're monitoring the people who were on the ship. And, you know, if anything changes, we'll keep an eye on it. All right, some other stuff you need to know. This hits closer to home. Wes Edens. You might know that name because he is the billionaire co-owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. He's been identified as the victim of an alleged $1 billion extortion scheme following a brief torrid love affair, which are the best kinds. Now, this is according to reporting in the Wall Street Journal. The charges filed in federal court do not publicly identify Edens, but the Wall Street Journal confirmed he is the person described in the indictment. The case is set to go to trial later this year. News of the alleged blackmail comes the same day as Eden's daughter Mallory was set to represent the Bucks at the 2026 NBA draft lottery. Prosecutors have charged a 46-year-old woman with blackmail, extortion, and other charges in the alleged shakedown. It continued for months, starting in late 2024 and went through spring of 2025. The blackmail reportedly began following dissolution of a brief romantic relationship between Edens and the woman. Now, according to court records and the Wall Street Journal, she threatened to publicize photographs and videos of she and Edens in compromising positions if Eden did not pay her more than $1 billion. Wow. And you thought having to buy a girl a dinner was expensive, Parker. That's less than a billion. She even reached out to Eden's family members, told him she would approach investors, and pledged to destroy him. Well, you know what they say about hell hath no fury. She reportedly accused Edens of having sex with her while she was mentally incapacitated and told him the cameras in her home had recorded everything he did to her. He denied the claims but reportedly participated in the scheme to avoid public embarrassment and to prevent his family from being harassed. Court records show he previously agreed to settle the matter for $6.5 million with $1 million up front. A spokesperson for Edens told the Wall Street Journal, Mr. Edens will be making no comment on the case as the indictment speaks for itself with respect to the charges against the defendant. Man, that is a horror story. That is some Fatal Attraction kind of stuff right there. Unbelievable. I've dated some crazy women in the past, Parker. I know that probably surprises you. But since I didn't have multi-billions of dollars, none of them tried to, one threw a brick at me, but none of them tried to extort money off me, which I guess is good.
Well, you piqued my interest. I dodged the brick, but I think that's for another day.
I dodged the brick and I dodged the relationship.
There you go.
What I cannot dodge is more stuff we need to know. Mm-hmm. See how I did that? Yeah. So Iran has responded to the latest U.S. proposal to end the war, according to their state media yesterday. That's after an exchange of hostilities that followed the Strait of Hormuz, hostilities around the Strait of Hormuz in recent days, highlighted by the fragility of a ceasefire the two sides reached more than a month ago, which, if you've been following the news over the weekend, we've been shooting at each other. So I don't know about the ceasefire. Well, of course, as soon as Iran sent this message to and ceasefire proposal via Pakistani mediators, saying they wanted to negotiations to focus on permanently ending the war, but guess what our president quickly said? Well, he rejected it as totally unacceptable in capital letters on Truth Social. Put no other details in there, just totally unacceptable, which is kind of par for the course for the way that this administration is dealing with international relations, where we don't sit down and negotiate because, well, they'll call us, is what the president told us before. So still waiting for that call, even though the message did come in through Pakistani mediators. Now this one is totally unacceptable. So on Iran's front, they seek to end the war on all fronts, including in Lebanon, where Israel is fighting the Iranian-backed Hezbollah militant group, and to ensure the security of shipping, State TV said. So Washington's latest proposal addressed a deal to end the war, reopen the strait, and roll back Iran's nuclear program. So earlier yesterday on social media, the president accused Tehran of, quote unquote, playing games with the United States for nearly 50 years, adding, they will be laughing no longer. So again, resorting to threats, saying they're now, again, the Iranian regime is not to be trusted either. But at least there are, we're finding out through other channels, through the Pakistani mediators, that there are proposals coming that way. We're giving all or nothing ultimatums. We have decided, we as a country, and by we, I mean the administration, because I surely do not share their viewpoints. The administration has decided that ultimatums are better than negotiations. And this is a all-in, win or lose. There can be no subtlety. There can be no compromise. It is a zero-sum game. We're either going to win, which who knows what win means in Donald Trump's world now, since he hasn't really given us even a reason why we're there that's reliable in any way. So how is this going to ever change? Because his idea of diplomacy is sitting on Truth Social, typing in all caps. Now, the president did say he's giving diplomacy every chance we possibly can before going back to hostilities. That actually was not the president. That was Ambassador to the UN Mike Waltz on ABC yesterday. Iran's new supreme leader, who has not been seen or heard publicly since the war began, issued new and decisive directives for the continuation of operations and the powerful confrontation with enemies while meeting with the head of the Joint Military Command, that according to state broadcasting in Iran. Now, the fragile ceasefire was tested, if you were paying attention over the weekend, and quite frankly, I would not blame you if you weren't. If you can find a day to completely unplug from all of this, take it. Take it when you can, because I have a feeling all the bad news is still going to be there with more piled on top of it if you take that day to unwind. So, the fragile ceasefire was tested when a drone ignited a small fire on a ship off Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates and Kuwait reported drones entering their airspace. The UAE said it shot down two drones and blamed Iran. No casualties were reported. No one immediately claimed responsibility. Qatar's foreign ministry called the ship attack a dangerous and unacceptable escalation that threatens the security and safety of maritime trade routes and vital supplies in the region. The United Kingdom Maritime Trade Operations Center gave no details about the ship's owner or origin. Now, the president has reiterated his threats to resume full-scale bombing if Iran does not accept an agreement to reopen the strait and roll back its nuclear program. Iran has largely blocked the strategic waterway. That's key, as you know, as we've said many times, to the global flow of oil, natural gas, and fertilizer. So the markets are going up. We're all paying more at the pump. The negotiations are not happening because the president doesn't want to keep sending people over to Iran or to Pakistan to meet with Iran. So we're stuck with a president who is, even if there are negotiations going on back channels and in, you know, behind closed doors, his public taunts on Truth Social are setting all those negotiations back if they're even happening. So, okay. Well, guess what? Closer to home, the FBI has decided they are going to investigate Wisconsin's 2020 election. Yes, remember 2020? That was 6 years ago. Remember who lost that election? The current president. You know who can't let it go? The current president. The FBI has started an investigation into Wisconsin's 2020 election that, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's reporting and talking to some sources, the investigation is only in a preliminary phase. It's focused on vetting previous complaints, and no ballots have been seized in Wisconsin to this point, according to the sources. Now, confirmation of the probe came as the Journal Sentinel reported that an FBI agent had interviewed a state election official in recent days. The agent spoke with Wisconsin Elections Commission Deputy Administrator Robert Keough and discussed how elections are handled in Wisconsin. We've covered this so many times. We told you how elections were covered here. You audited those elections and everything was fine. So the president, as you know, repeatedly falsely claimed that he won the 2020 election. The recount in two Wisconsin counties that his campaign paid for, court rulings, a state audit, and a conservative review have all confirmed that Trump lost not only in Wisconsin, but the entire election. But in Wisconsin, it has been litigated and investigated and checked over. According to a spokeswoman for the Wisconsin Elections Commission, we are not aware of an active investigation, but they have been preparing for an investigation, especially in Milwaukee. So he's focusing on Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin. They've all been central in his false claims that he won the 2020 election. Remember, oh, in the middle of the night, all of a sudden, he says, oh, there were all the dumps, the vote dumps and the ballot dumps, and it's just stop. Just stop. But it will not stop, and so neither will we, because Parker, I'm nothing if not a man who will not quit. I'm like a dog with a bone. We're going to stay on top of this, and you can stay on top of it with us right here on Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan, and this is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All right, it is Swiper's Day, our little delve into pop culture with our executive producer, Frank. Now, Frank, explain the rules, because it's different when Jamie is not here.
They are a little bit different. So everybody, welcome in. If you have never listened to Swiper's Day, here's how it goes. I'm going to read some vague pop culture headlines. Now, usually it's Brian and Jamie that have to decide whether to stay or swipe to the next one. But we let Parker have just a little bit more control here.
He does get a little full of himself on days when Jamie's not
here. He does.
Well, there's more room here.
Yes, well, I'll reel him in if need be. But
all right.
So Parker and Brian both get to decide whether they want to stay and hear more about the story or
gee,
swipe
who's gonna break
onto
a tie?
The next one. I will break the tie.
Oh, and I wonder what will happen when you have to break a tie, Frank.
Or well,
let's
here,
find
we
out.
Can we can even make this more fun. If you're on the live stream and you hear me read a headline, I will let you vote.
Ooh.
And if these two can't decide and we have a bunch of votes one way or the other on the live stream or over text, I will pick that.
Sounds good.
Well,
all right. Let's move on to story number one. NBA star files for restraining order.
Ooh. Against some psycho. I'm going to stay. We'll start it off with a stay.
Yeah, I'll stay on that.
Charlotte Hornets star Miles Bridges was granted a restraining order against his ex Michelle Johnson. So this comes after Miles made a claim in court saying his ex abandoned their four kids with a nanny, drove to the Spectrum Center while intoxicated, rented a room at a nearby hotel, stationed an accomplice in the lobby, and crouched behind Miles' parked car at the facility's garage to tamper with his tires while he was on the court playing for the Hornets. The petition also claims that Michelle launched a cyber attack on him and his lawyer in the days following.
Good God.
He claims she created a fake phone number to send him a text with his home address to scare him.
Holy smokes.
Now, look, I think we've all had some relationships that didn't go the way we expected. And maybe they didn't have a graceful ending. Maybe
correct.
You broke up with her a week before prom and decided to still take her.
That's done.
Brian. But I got to give Miss Michelle Johnson, if all of this is true, I got to give her credit. That's commitment.
That's crazy.
It's absolutely insane.
Kathy Bates
that is boys, that is committing to the bit. If you're going to do it.
No.
They're
not calling this a bit.
There's a difference. No, this is not. Yeah, this is not a bit.
We are not condoning any of this behavior.
Making a guy's life horrible because he doesn't watch her. Because he's done. See, that's it. You just got a clean cut.
Dude, sneaking into the facility to get to his car to tamper it.
That's the scariest thing ever.
While he's playing.
Well, yeah. How is she getting in? And why did she need a hotel room nearby with an accomplice?
I don't know. She is the mother of his kids. So I think
she
probably
the kids
does
with.
Get, well, and she probably gets granted access. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
All right, moving on.
Yeah.
Jeff Epstein's brother calls BS.
I just like that you called him Jeff, like you guys hang or hung.
Jeff.
Yeah, I'll stay.
I can stay on that.
Who goes by Jeffrey? Anyway, Mark Epstein.
I go by King Joffrey.
Almost as bad as Jeffrey. Anyway, Mark Epstein, the brother of the disgraced New York financier, says that the suicide note that was recently found is fake.
Duh.
Mark Epstein told Business Insider he's seen the note. And he's not buying it, claiming it would be the easiest effing thing for a forger to whip up a fake one. The note includes a line which reads, "What you want me to do? Bust out crying?" Which references the Little Rascals, and Jeffrey Epstein put similar remarks in emails he sent Mark and others. Mark says all this proves is that a forger had access to the Epstein files, which they used to mimic his brother's voice in the forgery. He said, "It's public knowledge, it's in the email, so they stole it from me to make it sound like it was him." It's also worth noting the court documents indicate this note was sealed in 2021, long before the files were released. But my question is, does the handwriting match? You're his brother.
Yeah, that's the thing that I was thinking
about.
But
you can also,
look for that?
They could. But if they're not predisposed to look for it, they're just going to take it at face value and go, "Look, see, he did kill himself. Here's the note. No need to dig any deeper."
I know, but you don't even need to do too much analyzing. Like if I'm his brother and go, that's not his handwriting, or it seems a bit off.
Yeah.
You can just call that out like it is. That's my one question for Mark. What's the handwriting look like? Anyway.
I think the whole thing is very sus.
It is. Former Cy Young Award winner offers to pitch for free.
I'm going to swipe.
Oh, you know I want to stay on this.
We're staying. Okay.
Well, duh.
Trevor Bauer is begging to get back into the big leagues. Trevor Bauer was the man who started to play with a drone and had a bit of an accident in the 2016 World Series.
Oh, right. Okay, I remember that guy.
That injured his hand, helping the Chicago Cubs win the World Series for the first time in 108 years and ruined Cleveland's chances and are now the most cursed team in baseball.
Cleveland does not rock.
It sure doesn't. So he's taking the social media to beg to get back into Major League Baseball.
All right.
He said, hypothetical, you're the owner of an MLB team. I offer to take $0 salary and sign a minor league contract and go to low A ball. If the he sucks now crowd is right and I get lit up, you cut me, you lose no money, and there's no risk to being in the big leagues. He said, if the clubhouse cancer crowd is right, you see it immediately at low A and cut me. You lose $0 and there's no risk.
Okay.
Parker's giving me 20 seconds, so I got to wrap up.
All right. Well, it would make sense, except you are then taking a spot from somebody who could potentially keep going. When we come back, we're going to talk about the big Menards lawsuit with a personal injury lawyer. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie is out this week, but will rejoin us next Monday. If you need hardware, if you need home improvement, maybe you need some siding, maybe if you need groceries and you're in Wisconsin, there is a good chance you have gone to Menards to get those things. Well, last month, an Eau Claire County jury awarded $5.5 million to a Menards worker who was injured on the job at the company's distribution center. The case had been in court since 2020. So what are your rights if you're injured at work? And what message does this verdict send to other companies in Wisconsin and beyond? Attorney Chris McGillis of the McGillis Law Group represented the worker in this case and joins me now. Chris, thanks for being here. Appreciate your time this morning. So for those of us who only heard about the case through some short news reports, give us a little background on this case.
Yeah, no, thank you, Brian. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it. Love your show. The background of the case is our client was delivering freight to one of Menards distribution centers. And unfortunately, because of lack of training, lack of supervision, he was seriously injured when freight fell off the truck when it was being moved by a forklift operator.
Ooh, so who was the untrained, with the forklift operator? Is that the argument? Or your client?
Yes. So a little complicated factually, but the forklift operator was a temporary employee that Menards used at their distribution center.
Okay.
Our client was a truck driver that delivered freight for Menards and for other companies in the area.
Okay. And what kind of injuries did your client suffer?
A significant head injury, laceration to the head. It was pretty graphic.
So what, as you take this case and, your law firm, like I said, McGillis.com is the website. You took the case. What is your argument then against Menards? What's the basis of the case, or what was the basis of the case? Because as we said, it's already been adjudicated and the settlement's been in.
Yeah, thanks, Bryce. So the main reason why these cases are so important is because they're not only about the individual that's injured, but it's also about the community and the workers and the people that are there. So when a case like this comes down from the jury, it's sending a message that workplace safety is extremely important. We all know when you work somewhere, you have to be trained, you have to be supervised, you have to understand how to use the equipment that you're operating with. And the big thing here, why we stood up to Menards, is because Menards was not making sure their employees were supervised. They were not making sure that they were trained properly on using dangerous equipment.
Yeah, you would think, I've talked about this before, I worked on a loading dock when I was in college, and I was put on a forklift and nobody told me how to do it. And you would think, like you said, that would just be common sense. What was the defense from Menards in this case?
Well, it was somewhat complicated because we had a temporary employee involved. Okay. But the bottom line is that, so OSHA, we all have heard of OSHA, right?
Sure.
OSHA has very clear guidelines on what's required for these types of jobs, these types of employees, these types of work. And Menards just simply didn't follow it. And they attempted to, shift blame, deflect, put responsibility on other people, including our client. And so part of that process, the vindication from the jury is the jury said there was zero fault on our client for doing anything on that day.
Were you at all apprehensive because the trial took place where Menards is headquartered? So you would think the jury pool would also have people who had some sort of ties or strong feelings about Menards.
No, it's a great question, Brian. So we were in Menards' hometown. We were in Eau Claire County. And what we found was we found honest, fair jurors. People that had strong feelings on both sides. Mm-hmm. But what we asked for is we wanted jurors that were neutral, that were fair, and that would listen to the evidence. And that's what they did. But what we know is that based on the case that came in, the jury felt strongly that Menards violated the safety rules. And that's what's important. That's how you make change. And that's why this case is so important, because it sends a signal to corporations in the state of Wisconsin, frankly, throughout the country, that if you violate known safety rules, you will be held responsible.
So because this was a civil case, was OSHA involved at all?
No, that's a great question, Brian. So OSHA doesn't get involved unless the employer or the employee make a complaint. So they don't actively, there's not like a message that gets sent out by carrier pigeon to OSHA when something happens. That was an issue in the case. So we thought we brought that to the jury's attention and they considered that evidence. Menards did not notify OSHA.
Whose responsibility is it to now? Was it, and clarify this, your client, yes. Your client was a truck driver who delivered for Menards. Was he an employee of Menards?
No, he was not an employee of Menards. Okay. So Wisconsin has workers' compensation exclusivity. He was considered an independent worker. So he had his own company and he was delivering freight from one Menards to another.
Okay. So he was contracted by Menards. And then the driver was the temporary employee. So then if there's a incident like there was with your client, it's Menards' responsibility, or would it be let's make this any company's responsibility to report that to OSHA? Is that correct?
Yeah, there are varying degrees of responsibility. I think the employee could notify OSHA. The employer could notify OSHA. There are certain criteria that would be met. But what I would tell the public is this, your viewers. If you're involved in a workplace incident and you don't believe somebody was trained, you don't believe someone was certified, you think that someone's cutting corners on safety, notify OSHA. Call an attorney that's experienced in these types of injuries, because that's the only way to make change is standing up and saying, hey, time out. We're not going to let you expose, our team, our customers, our community to this type of stuff.
Well, that sounds good, but I'm sure you've run into this. And I'm talking to Chris McGillis of McGillis Law Group. He is the attorney that handled this case with the worker and the Menards verdict. I'm sure you have talked to people who think they've been injured at work. There's no doubt about that. But if they complain or if they file with OSHA, there's going to be some sort of retribution. Maybe they lose their job. What rights do workers have if they have been injured to pursue either a complaint with OSHA or to pursue some sort of legal action to make sure if the company they work for is not taking care of them?
Yeah, workers have rights. And one of those rights is to pursue your civil claim for injury. If an employer is retaliating against someone, I'm not an employment lawyer, but if someone's retaliating against a worker for filing a legitimate claim, I would highly, highly recommend them to talk to an employment lawyer. I don't think that is okay. Mm-hmm. And we have to be comfortable, even though it's hard, we have to be comfortable standing up and having the courage. I mean, that's the word I use. You have to have the courage to stand up, because that's the only way change comes, Brian. You have to voice your concern. You have to say, no, this isn't right. And I'm not saying do that on every case. I'm not saying a frivolous lawsuit, but when this is a legitimate thing, and in this case it was, I mean, the jury overwhelmingly said 100% on the operator Menards. This wasn't, we're not really sure.
Right.
This was with us having the burden of proof. We've met our burden of proof with the evidence in trial.
Now, you also, one of your specialties at McGillis Law Group is representing first responders. It sounds like, I'm just using this Menards case as a blueprint. It sounds unbelievable to me that police officers and firefighters would have to sue because they're not being taken care of by their own departments. Is that more widespread than we would think?
Yeah, Brian, we have a special relationship with first responders. We work with police and firefighter unions across the state of Wisconsin. I mean, being able to protect people that protect you is a special thing, and we really, really take that seriously. We deal with first responder injuries, first responder, you know, squad crashes, truck crashes, injuries all the time. And you'd be surprised. Sometimes, Brian, sometimes it happens because people are being lazy, because they don't know the rules, and sometimes things just happen.
Yeah. Because there are accidents, right? Things are just an accident.
And sometimes there are just accidents. But the big thing is understanding that if you are injured and you didn't do anything wrong, being able to have that addressed, because it's not fair to, for example, a first responder or a truck driver or anybody to be shouldered with, you know, your bills, your medical expenses, your mortgage, and you're left holding the bag when someone else makes a mistake. So what we told the jury, Brian, was we said, hey, our client didn't do anything wrong. He was just trying to do his job.
Right.
And that's what he told the jury. He said, it's not fair to me that when I'm just trying to do my job and someone else isn't following the safety rules, that I have to shoulder 100% of that fault.
No, and I don't think there's anybody who would hear you say that and go, well, that doesn't sound right. No, if you're going about your business, doing your job, everybody should be doing it. This is something, I know I'm not the only one who's wondered about this, but the jury awarded your client $5.5 million. We hear different injury cases, different dollar amounts. Behind the scenes, and this not this case in particular, but just in general, when you're going to a case, how are those numbers decided? Is it how much you ask for? How do you decide like how much to seek in your lawsuit? How does the jury decide how much to award? Where does all that math happen?
Right. So there are two main things, economic damages and non-economic damages. My biggest piece of advice for your viewers, Brian, is to hire an experienced lawyer that has a track record of winning and winning verdicts that make a difference. Because those people, those lawyers will understand how to articulate your interest and put forth the best case they can for you.
Can you real quick explain those two different kind of judgments?
Absolutely. So economic, which would be medical bills, wage loss, things like that. Those are things that you can quantify with math.
Yes.
And then not non-economic damages. So pain and suffering, mental anguish, humiliation, embarrassment. In Wisconsin, those are all things we can recover under our jury instructions.
How do you put a number on those things, though?
Yeah,
it's always something I've always just wondered about.
It's a great question. It's a great question. So, I would say to you is experience. Having a lawyer that has experience articulating how that works, and then being able to explain to the jury the things that have been taken and tell the story of the client to the jury.
Okay, and then they figure out, well, this person could have made X amount if they were able to continue with their careers. And I'm not asking that question to discount mental anguish or pain and suffering. I just always wondered how you quantify that. Because well, one person's this, suffering is yeah, somebody else's.
Can I tell it in this way?
Yes, please.
You probably have someone you love, a spouse, a child, a sister, a brother, okay?
Yeah.
And a lot of this is common sense. So how much value is your relationship with that person? How much would you put a price on taking a walk and being pain-free? How much would a price would you put on being able to enjoy an activity, whether it be stamp collecting, fishing? I mean, these are things, there's not a mathematical formula.
You have to use your common sense. It's
There's not a mathematical formula, Brian. It's a common sense. Use your life experiences.
No, I understand. That's why, as you said numerous times, Chris, and you are right, you need an experienced attorney to handle that for you, because we all know that those are valid things. But I would be like, I don't know how much I'd put on a, you know, a walk. I would want.
Yeah.
Obviously, I want to do that forever. I want to be pain free. So it's, you got to have the right person with the right experience. Maybe they go to McGillis.com. That's M-A-C-G-I-L-L-I-S, McGillis.com, to talk to you, because you know what's going on. You have the track record of winning. Chris McGillis is the founder and partner of McGillis Law Group. They helped this worker win a $5.5 million judgment against Menards for violating safety rules. Maybe he can help you. Chris, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks a lot for all the advice.
Hey, Brian, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Yep, take care. When we come back, is your commute making you reevaluate where you work? You wouldn't be the only one. It is Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Welcome back. 855-75-CIVIC is how you get a hold of us. I'm wondering how long your commute is and if gas prices are making you start to consider changing your job. Now, that's a drastic step. We all know how much it's costing us to get gas. I was thinking the other day, in my former job, I used to drive from the north side of Chicago to Milwaukee every day. I was filling up a couple times a week. So at that point, I was spending maybe $120 a week on gas. I would now be spending almost $200 a week on gas. I would not continue working in that at that level. That just, it's untenable. And I was reading this story about a lot of people who are starting to make that choice because we are feeling the pain from these gas prices. There's no doubt. The average gallon of gas, $4.52 across the nation yesterday, up from $2.98 when the conflict began in late February. The conflict. The news trying to whitewash the war. It is a war of choice. So now we're paying all this money. Parker, your commute's pretty short. What did you say, like 15 minutes?
15, 20, yeah.
20 minutes. Yeah. 20 minutes, that's okay. It's still a commute. Yeah. But you're using, if you added, let's say you had to add another 40 minutes to that commute. Let's say you lived an hour from work.
Yeah. Yeah. I would not do that.
Yeah.
I would not want to live that far and have to, because the way it is now, if I were to only drive to and from work, I would have to fill up my tank like probably once every 2 weeks, I would guess, probably.
Okay.
So that's not that big of an expense then, right? Because that's.
Sure.
That said, I filled up this morning, $45.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You're still paying a lot more for those two tankfuls than you were six weeks ago.
Yeah.
8 weeks ago.
Yeah, but for how infrequent it usually is for me, it's not terrible. I don't have to think about working closer to home.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're working in your home, which it would be.
Which is what you do. You don't have to worry about it.
I do it now. I never did before, but I'm doing it now just because we're on all over the state. So
that's true.
You know, we get to.
You can't be at every station at once.
I can't. No. I try. I would love to. I would love to somehow clone myself. That would be a nightmare for all involved.
Yes, it would.
But think of more of me all over the state. I mean, every corner of Wisconsin.
One's fine.
Just me. And it'd be like Multiplicity, the movie with Michael Keaton, where each clone got progressively dumber. And some of you I know are thinking, how there's no way that could happen. But trust me, I could get dumber. I'm trying not to, but I probably could. So workers with long commutes are being hit by this thing. A larger share of job seekers, and I know my wife is one, are looking for fully remote jobs. That's a big change. But we all know most jobs you can't do fully remote. You have to be there to do your job. And if you're looking to change, this is a bad time to be looking to change careers or change jobs, because despite what we're hearing from the administration, jobs, at least if you're trying to even make a lateral move, jobs are tough to find. It's very hard. So that's why a lot might be saying, oh, I want to move to a different job that's closer to me, but I can't. So more and more workers are looking for a job within a 30-mile radius. That's according to Indeed, the job search website. That rose to 59.2% in April. It was up from 57.8% in February. It's a small increase, but who doesn't want to live closer to where they work? Just to cut down on even, let's take gas out of it, even just for a commute time. Do you want to be sitting in traffic? And if you live or work around Milwaukee or Madison here, it's insane. You don't want to be driving forever to get to work. Because now you've taken your eight-hour day, you've expanded it to 10, some people 11, maybe a little more. They're used to, when I lived in California, because of housing costs being so high, there was a saying, you drive till you can afford it. So you would drive out to find where you could buy a house, but that meant you were sitting in traffic. Some people were in traffic up to 2 hours each way trying to get to work just so they could have a house. That's no way to live your life. So more employees are working from home. That's up to 26% in March and April compared to 24% in January. A lot of companies, though, one can't and two won't go fully remote, so we're going to have to keep dealing with it. I would love to hear from you if you're in this position and you're saying, Brian, I can't. I've started looking for a job. I have to get closer to home, because if you're like me, one of the biggest banes of my existence is sitting in traffic, and especially after a long day of work, you do not want to be sitting in traffic. And that's why people, you know, it used to be sometimes after work, you'd sit, stand around, maybe you'd have a chat with your coworker or whatever. Now people are bolting for their cars because they're like, we've got to get so far, and it takes me a long time, and I got to sit in traffic, and I'm going to have a heart attack just yelling at people because they're all stupid. And that's, you know, that's how every commute is. All right, we are saying goodbye to our friends at WMDX. You're going to listen to Stephanie Miller, but you can always follow us on the Civic Media app, and you can download that and listen to the show. And if you miss the final hour, be sure you go to Spotify, subscribe, and then you can always listen to the third hour of this show whenever you want while you're still enjoying Stephanie Miller. For everybody else on the network, sit tight. We'll be back with stuff you need to know. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
Oh, you figured it out?
I figured it out. I'm like, why is he still playing this bad instrumental of On the Road Again?
Yeah, no, I'm
because,
sorry.
Because, well, listen, no, you shouldn't be sorry. It's me. I hate the clock. Hey, let me take these few seconds to remind you to go to our new Instagram and Facebook pages, A Daybreak with Brian and Jamie, so that you can follow us and maybe you can teach me to tell time on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.